Welcome to Gadajing. I'm your host, Nani Salas. An interesting thing happened just a few minutes before the show, and that is my guest was not able to make it. And I sat in quandary of, well, what should I do? Should I, just do the show without him? Should I cancel the show? What should I do here? And a very deep voice inside of me says, no, go ahead and do the show. And my mental chatter was saying, alone, I'm going to do the show alone. And then suddenly I realized that I was not alone, that truly I wasn't alone, and that there is this presence inside of me, that there is this presence that we call God inside of me right now. And so if this is fact the case, and it is, how could I possibly be doing the show alone? And it made me start thinking of all the times in my life and all the times in so many of our lives that we did feel alone. I know, whoever you are, that you have experienced that. And how do I know this? Because we all experience this. This sense that we're alone, disconnected, that we're not a part of something greater, that we're not in partnership, or that maybe we feel that nobody really loves us or cares about us, despite evidence to the contrary. This is an illusion. This is not anywhere near what is true. In fact, it's impossible to be alone. You are always connected to everyone and everything. You are always one with the divine. And maybe one of the reasons we forget that we are in fact one with the divine is because we get to have these experiences of separation that would not exist if we always remembered who we were, if we always were connected divinely to that which is us and that which is everything. And so tonight, I invite you to remember that you are not alone. I invite you to remember that God is always with you, that God is always working through you, that God is your partner, and God is looking out for you. When we remember this, then life is easy. When we think thoughts that I am alone, and nobody is with me, and I have to do this all by myself, then we feel sad, then we feel distant, then we feel isolated, we feel disconnected. And when we think thoughts that I am truly loved, I am truly provided for, I am truly one with all, and the all is providing for me now and always, then we feel joyful and happy. Then we are in touch with who we are. Then we are everything we have always looked for, everything that we have always prayed to. We are this God that we have been seeking, because this God is inside of us. If you've been following the show, you know that Gadajing is an answer to religion, that so many of us have left religions, or so many of us have never connected to religions, and yet we have this desire to connect with God, yet we have this desire to know God and to have God live in our lives. Gadajing is a way back to God on your own terms. I'm not here to give you the answers or to prophesize or to preach or to provide anything other than a space for you to reconnect with the God inside of you. This is what we're all looking for. This is what we've always been looking for. But this time in history it's very unique. It's a very, very special time. This is probably, and I would say definitely, the most amazing time to be alive in all of history. Why? Because this is the time of transcending. This is the time of ascension. This is the time of waking up and remembering who we are individually and collectively as a global consciousness. Every single one of us have come here now to transform our planet, to transform the way in which we live life here on Earth. that after this time, life will never be the same. Yes, yes, I know there's much talk of, you know, destruction in the world coming to the end, especially with some prophecies of 2012. But the only end that is coming is the end of fear. The only end that is coming is the end of war. The only end that is coming is the end of separation. The only end that is coming is the end of hate and crime. These are the ends that are coming. This is the end of the worlds that we have known. And not to judge this world, not to judge this end. No, not at all. We have needed every single experience to get to where we are now. We have needed every single hate crime and every single war and every single atrocious act to get to where we are now so that we are ready to wake up in the knowing that our actions, whether they have been aggressive or passive in the past, have not created a planet of peace. And now the time is upon us to make different choices. And those choices are ones of peace. Those choices are one of connection. Those choices are one of union. That we have reached a time in the history of our creation, the history of this planet, that we get to choose peace. And we get to choose oneness. And we get to choose living together in harmony. And then one of the most beautiful things about this is the fact that it is a choice and that each and every one of us have volunteered to come here to live on this planet right now to make that choice possible, and not just possible, but to initiate that choice, and not just to initiate that choice, but to create it in our own lives, and through creating it in our own lives, creating it in the world. Yes, it's very easy to look out into the world and say, oh my goodness, how can little old me make a difference? Most people have thought this thought. Maybe you have. And the answer is really very simple, that there really is no difference to make outside in the world. The difference is to make inside of you. That as you change, the world changes. And in fact, there's nothing happening out there. That everything that you experience in your life is simply a reflection of your subconscious mind. That if you don't like what's happening out there, change what's going on inside. It's kind of like going to the movies and you see a movie that you don't like. And, well, you don't get up and write on the screen of the movie to try to change it. Nothing's happening on the screen. It's happening from the projector in the back. If you don't like the movie, you have to change the film, not the screen. And I'll share a little story with you. Years ago, my mother, she was learning how to use computers, and she'll deny to this day that this story is true, but between you and me, it's true. Just don't tell her I'm telling you. Well, anyway, she typed a beautiful letter on the computer and then clicked print and printed it out, looked at it on the printed sheet of paper, and decided that she wanted to make some corrections. So she took her pen and whiteout and made some corrections on this piece of paper and went back to the computer and went to print it out again, only to find that it printed out exactly as it had the first time without her corrections. And she was confused and a bit frustrated. Why did this happen? I made all these corrections. Well, to you and me, this is completely ridiculous. Of course, we know that she needed to make the corrections on the computer and not on the piece of paper that came out of the printer. Well, just as ridiculous and foolish as this is to us computer-savvy people, or even not-so-computer-savvy people, it's just as ridiculous to expect life to change without you changing. That if you don't like what's going on out in the world, then you must change what's going on inside of you. That if there is hate going on in the world, whether you're seeing that on your block or in your community or even on TV, then that can only mean that there's something inside of you, a part of you that is not in integrity with peace. And that when you find that peace inside of you and that you change that peace, then you have healed the world and the world begins to change. And every time you see something out in the world that you don't like, instead of blaming the world, instead of blaming someone else, you get to take responsibility for it. And not responsibility in a bad way, but responsibility in a way that you are empowered. Responsibility in a way that you actually realize that you have some control, not just in your life, but in life in general. And that if it's something's happening out there, it's happening inside. This is the true power. I'd like to share something called the dream. And if this interests you, you can actually go to my website at nanice.com, and I'll give that to you again a little bit later, and read about the dream. And the dream really demonstrates exactly what we're talking about here today. So close your eyes for a minute, if you can, if you're in a safe place, and imagine that tonight you go to sleep and you dream that your neighbor does some horrible and abusive things to you. Now, this might mean that he graffitis your house, hurts your pet, or does even worse. In the dream, you have a great sense of anger, hurt, and a desire for revenge. We've all been there at times. When you wake up in the morning and realize that it was just a dream, all desires for revenge disappear. You realize that your neighbor is innocent because you made it all up in your sleep and he really didn't do anything to you. The next night, you once again dream that your neighbor does cruel and unjust things to you. But this time, in the dream, you decide to get revenge and you go next door to make him stop. In an out-of-control rage, you end up killing him. You feel overwhelming guilt and remorse in the dream. But once you wake up and remember it was just a dream, you see yourself and your neighbor as innocent. No one was really hurt because it was just a dream. The next night, you have the same dream about your neighbor. But just as you're about to get revenge, remember that you are dreaming. You remember that you are the dreamer of the dream and that none of what you are dreaming is real. As your neighbor answers the door in your dream, you see him as a creation of you, of the dreamer. And now, even in the dream, you know him to be innocent. Suddenly, any desire for revenge is replaced with love and fascination. You realize that as you blamed your neighbor, you have really been hurting yourself all along, and even in the dream, there is really only one, and that one is you. You wake up from the dream and hear a knock on the door. You get up, open your door, and you are surprised to find that very same neighbor in real life. You invite him in, suddenly seeing him very different than you ever have before. He leans in close to you and gently whispers, "Wake up, you're still dreaming." I love this story because this exemplifies life. That really there is nothing happening out there. And when we have when we experience somebody being cruel to us, when we experience our neighbor or our spouse or anybody for that matter doing something hurtful to us, that they're really not doing it to us, that it is really simply a projection of what is happening out in the world. And when we take responsibility for it, instead of blaming someone else, instead of making them want to change, instead of feeling like a victim to them, instead we say, oh, wait a second, this is me, this is all me, and how am I creating this? Just as this man in the dream experienced himself as the dreamer and creator of the experience, so can you. And in this place, we take true power back. And this is how we change the world. This is how we make a difference. We are all looking to make that difference and understanding that we are the creator of our lives and that we are creating everything through our subconscious patterns allows us to look within and find that place inside of us that is creating what it is that we want to change, or maybe understanding the wonderful things that we're creating as well, because truly that is coming from us as well. Well, in a few moments, I want to read this story called The Rabbi's Gift to you that I have found in a book by M. Scott Peck, The Different Drum. And it really is going to just build on what we've already been talking about. But before that, I'd like to invite you into a beautiful meditation. And so if you're in a safe place, please close your eyes and take a deep breath. And follow your breath. And just become aware of the in-breath and the out-breath, the inhale and the exhale. And notice how your body feels as you breathe. Notice that the sense of letting go is experienced in the body with every exhale. Letting go of stress and tension. Letting go of thoughts. Letting go of the to-do list. Letting go of everything. Everything, everything. And with the inhale, imagine that you can inhale beautiful golden light. Imagine that as you breathe in, that you're breathing in specks of golden light. And your lungs are filling up with this golden light. With every breath, more and more golden light coming into your body. More and more golden light filling your lungs. And as your lungs are filled with this golden light, it starts to move into your bloodstream. But this golden light is moving in your bloodstream and moving through your veins and arteries, moving through your heart. And you might begin to feel a sense of tingling or warmth or greater relaxation. And as your whole body fills with this golden light, you realize that you are becoming lighter. You realize that you are becoming more at peace. You are realizing that you are divine light. And with every breath, you relax even more. With every inhale, you inhale more light. And with every exhale, you let go even more. Deeper, deeper, deeper. And as I count from 10 down to 1, you relax even more into this golden, divine self of who you really are. 10, 9, 8, more and more relaxed. 7, 6, 5, deeper into yourself. 4, 3, 2, 1, 1. One, completely and absolutely relaxed. That when you look at your body with your mind's eye, you see golden light in every cell in your body, emanating from every cell in your body, that you are this divine light. Now imagine that there is a beautiful golden light coming from the center of the earth. And this is the heart chakra of the earth. And in this heart chakra, there is absolute love for you, absolute love for everyone on this planet. And this heart chakra is also emanating this golden light. And this time as you breathe, you're inviting this golden light up from the center of the earth into the soles of your feet. And this is the earth's love for you. And just let it move up. Let it move up to the soles of your feet, into your body. And as it does, experience the love of the earth for you and how you are loved by Mother Earth, that you are cared for, that the breath that you breathe is perfect just for you, and the food that you eat is perfect just for you, and that your needs are met by Mother. That Mother Earth is protecting you and providing for you and loving you. And as this energy intermingles with the golden light of the divine that you just breathed in a few moments ago, you realize that you are loved completely and divinely by a divine force, by God, by Mother Earth, by all, and that you are safe and you are cared for. And not only that, you are someone special in the universe. That you are not just here for some careless reason, that you are here and you are alive because you are someone special and that you have gifts to give and you have so much to share and your very existence matters in the universe and here on this planet. And you are this love that we speak of, and that you are the God divine incarnate in human form, that this is you. And knowing this changes everything. It changes everything. And so please take another deep breath and bring back this beautiful feeling of relaxation and knowing who you really are. And I'd like to read you this story from The Different Realm by M. Scott Peck. And this is really a book about community. And the story, although related to community, is also related to remembering that you are this divine being. And so it is called The Rabbi's Gift. And I'm going to read it exactly as it is in The Different Realm. And it goes like this. The story concerns a monastery that had fallen upon hard times. Once a great order, as a result of waves of anti-monastic persecution in the 17th and 18th centuries, and the rise of secularism in the 19th, all its branch houses were lost, and it had become decimated to the extent that there were only 5 monks left in the decaying mother house, the abbot and 4 others all over the age of 70. Clearly, it was a dying order. In the deep woods surrounding the monastery, there was a little hut that a rabbi from a nearby town occasionally used as a hermitage. Through their many years of prayer and contemplation, the old monks had become a bit psychic, so they could always sense when the rabbi was in his hermitage. "The rabbi is in the woods, the rabbi is in the woods," they would whisper to each other. As the abbot agonized over the imminent death of his order, it occurred to him at one such time to visit this place where the rabbi would go, and ask the rabbi if, by some possible chance, he could offer any advice that might save the monastery. The rabbi welcomed the abbot at his hut, but when the abbot explained the purpose of his visit, the rabbi could only commiserate with him. "I know how it is," he exclaimed. "The spirit has gone out of the people. It is the same in my town. Almost no one comes to the synagogue anymore." So the abbot and the old rabbi wept together. Then they read parts of the Torah and quietly spoke of deep things. The time came when the abbot had to leave. They embraced each other. "It has been a wonderful thing that we should meet after all these years," the abbot said. "But I still have failed in my purpose for coming here. Is there nothing you can tell me, no piece of advice you can give me that would help me save my dying order?" "No, no, I'm sorry," the rabbi responded. "I have no advice to give. The only thing I can tell you, though, is that the Messiah is one of you." When the abbot returned to the monastery, his fellow monks gathered around him to ask, "Well, what did the rabbi say? What did the rabbi say?" The abbot answered, "He couldn't help. We just wept and read the Torah together. The only thing he did say, just as I was leaving, well, it was cryptic, actually, was that the Messiah is one of us. I don't know what he means by that." In the days and weeks and months that followed, the old monks pondered this and wondered whether there was any possible significance to the rabbi's words. "The Messiah is one of us? Could he possibly have meant one of us monks here at the monastery? Well, if that's the case, which one? Which one could it be? Do you suppose that he meant the abbot?" "Well, yes, of course he meant the abbot. He probably meant Father Abbot. He has been our leader for more than a generation. But on the other hand, he might have meant Brother Thomas. Certainly Brother Thomas is a holy man. Everyone knows that Thomas is a man of light. Certainly he could not have meant Brother Eldred. Eldred gets crotchety at times. But come to think of it, even though he is a thorn in people's sides, when you look back on it, Eldred is virtually always right, often very right. Maybe the rabbi did mean Brother Eldred, but certainly not Brother Philip. Philip is so passive, a real nobody. But then almost mysteriously, he has a gift for somehow always being there when you need him. He has just magically appeared by your side more times than I can count. Maybe Philip is the Messiah. Of course, the rabbi didn't mean me. He couldn't possibly have meant me. I'm just an ordinary person. Yet suppose he did. Suppose I am the Messiah. Oh God. I hope not. It couldn't be that much. It couldn't be me. No, I couldn't be possibly the Messiah, but maybe I am. As they contemplated in this manner, the old monks began to treat each other with extraordinary respect on the off chance that one among them might just be the Messiah. And on the off chance that each monk himself might be the Messiah, they began to treat themselves with extraordinary respect. Because the forest in which it was situated was beautiful, it so happened that people still occasionally came to visit the monastery, to picnic on its tiny lawn, to wander along some of its path, even now and then, to go into the dilapidated chapel to meditate. As they did so, without even being conscious of it, they sensed this aura of extraordinary respect that now began to surround the five monks and seemed to radiate out from them and permeate the atmosphere of the place. There was something strangely attractive, even compelling about it. Hardly knowing why, they began to come back to the monastery more frequently, to picnic, to play, to pray. They began to bring their friends to show them this peace, this special place, and their friends brought their friends, and their friends brought their friends. Then it happened that some of the younger men who came to visit the monastery started to talk more and more with the old monks. After a while, one asked if he can join them, then another and another. And within a few years, the monastery had once again become a thriving order, and thanks to the rabbi's gift, a vibrant center of light and spirituality in the realm. This is the rabbi's gift. This is our gift. What would happen right now if you started to look at everyone in your life and everyone that you came in contact with as a possible Messiah, as a possible God in human form? Would you treat them differently? If you thought your spouse was the Messiah, or you thought your best friend or your mother or your father or your child was the Messiah, how might you treat them, thinking that they were this special, extraordinary being incarnate in human form? Would you treat them differently? Like our monks in this rabbi's gift, I imagine that you would, in fact, treat them differently. I imagine that you would start looking at them differently. I would imagine that you would start honoring them and giving them a place, a space, a presence that you had not done before. But even more than that, yes, and even more important than that, what would happen to you and what would happen to your life if, in fact, you started believing or even pondering the idea that you were the Messiah? What would happen tomorrow when you woke up in the morning and you thought, wow, I'm the Messiah, I'm God incarnate? Would you still be so unhard? Would you still be so hard on yourself? Would you still criticize yourself? Would you still look at your body and dislike it or even hate it? Would you still curse at yourself, either out loud or silently? Would you still criticize yourself? Would you still experience guilt and regret? Would you still experience yourself as less than or unworthy? Would you still think that you could never be enough? I think not. Instead, I think that you might start honoring yourself. I think that you might start looking at yourself a little different. I think that you might ignore those critical thoughts, those negative thoughts that plague you. I think that you might start noticing that you're more than enough. think that you might start owning your worth intrinsically and not based on how you do in a particular day or how successful you are at work or how you look or even how you feel. That if you woke up tomorrow and you remembered who you really are, I think you'd start being a little kinder to yourself. I think that you would, in fact, own your worth intrinsically and unconditionally and not need anyone or anything to claim your worth for you. And then what would happen? What kind of energy would you be emitting out into the world once you truly know your worth? Like the monks, would other people begin to feel yourself honoring, feel your respect for yourself? What kind of energy would you give off? Owning who you really are, owning your worth. And what would this energy do to others? How would this energy affect them and rub off on them? Would this energy, in fact, become a walking meditation, not just for you, but for all those who came in contact with you? And then, in fact, would you not be the Messiah? And how does that feel? To know that this truth of who you really are exists now and has always existed. And that the only thing to awaken this true self within you is simply remembering that this is who you really are. And that it's always been that easy. The key to awakening yourself is in remembering yourself. And this opportunity awaits for you every moment of every day. Now, I have to be honest with you. Just recently, I forgot this truth. I had a series of events happen in my life, and I forgot who I really was, and I doubted myself, and I doubted my purpose and my gifts. And in this doubt, there was hesitation, and in this hesitation, there was fear, and in this fear, there was pain. And this pain not just affected me, this pain was an energy that I emitted out, and others felt it and were affected by it, whether consciously or unconsciously. And it took me several days, maybe even a couple of weeks, to remember who I really was. And I actually needed a series of events and experiences, both internally and in the physical world, to wake me up and remind me who I was. And as soon as I remembered who I was, then suddenly the pain was gone and the fear was gone, the hesitation was gone, the doubt was gone. And what took its place was a confidence, a sense of worthiness, a sense of knowing, a sense of ownership of myself and my life. That sense of great divine love working through me and emanating out into the world for all to feel. And this is the choice that we each have every day. This is the choice that you have now. This is the choice that you get to wake up tomorrow and every tomorrow and make. And the choice is simple. It's remembering who you really are and claiming who you really are, that you truly are an extraordinary being, that you truly are God incarnated in human form, and that you are this special and magnificent aspect of God all at the same time, and that your purpose lies in simply being yourself and expressing who you really are. And giving up the facade that you have to be someone else, that you have to be someone different, that you have to act or pretend to succeed, when in fact, all you have to do is simply be yourself and have the courage to be who you really are. And this is also the cure for fear and depression. The cure being remembering who you really are and owning who you really are, that you are magnificent and you are powerful, all powerful, and that you truly have the power to create your life. And that power is inside of you. And that power is you. And so let's take another deep breath together. And in just a moment or so, we will do our prayer circle. And so I invite you to think of someone that you'd like to send prayers to. And this could be someone you know or someone you don't know that well. It can be the world and, of course, yourself. And as we do the prayer circle, I want you to remember that while you are possibly the one you're praying for, that you are also the conduit of the prayer. And that when we are done with the prayer circle and we say goodnight, that I invite you to listen to our theme song for Goddardy, and that is Secondhand God, with the purpose of remembering that God is not somewhere outside of you, that God is inside of you, and that everything you're looking for lies within you. And so I'm going to take another deep breath. And I want you to imagine for our prayer circle that there is a beautiful circle surrounded by light. And this light makes up the perimeter of this circle. And to whoever you'd like to send prayers for, please invite them into the circle. And that can be you, family, friends, the world. And imagine all these people in the world, yourself, whoever you're putting in the prayer circle, surrounded by this golden light. And imagine that this golden light, like a magnet to these people, is moving into the center of the circle and into everyone in the center of the circle. And imagine that this golden light is moving through everyone, just as it did in our earlier meditation. And as this light goes through, imagine that the healing is occurring. And the healing is not just even a physical healing of illness or disease, but a healing of false beliefs, a healing of fear, a healing of pain that is caused by emotions of a lower vibration. And this golden light is cleansing and healing and renewing and bringing life to everyone in the prayer circle. And I invite you to imagine everyone in the prayer circle, and even if you have not put anyone yourself into the prayer circle, those that others have put into the prayer circle and the earth itself, imagine that all is well, and that a complete and full healing has already taken place. And this truly is the secret to healing, to imagine wellness, to imagine wholeness. And I'll give you a moment to just imagine the earth itself completely whole and healed. And when you feel that it's done, simply say to yourself or out loud, it is done, it is done, it is done. And we thank the divine for complete and absolute return to wholeness. And so, as we end God or Chi tonight, I invite you to remember that you are perfect, that you are whole, that there is nothing that you need to do or change, that everything about you and everything about you that you think, that you feel, is perfect and whole already, and that you are divine in everything you do, everything you say, everything that you create in your life. And there's nothing to add, and there's nothing to take away. And if there is something that seems not to be right, that it's just an illusion, and that if you don't like it in your life, then simply change it in your mind and see exactly what it is that you want to create, and see yourself as whole and happy. See yourself as complete and divine. See yourself as the most perfect, beautiful being that has ever existed. Because the truth is, that is exactly who you are. Please visit me on my website at nanice.com, at nanice.com. Read about the dream there that we shared earlier this evening. And the way to find the dream is on the main page. Just scroll all the way down and click on the dream. And there's tons of free articles under articles, shows, and more. All my shows are archived from BBS Radio and also from Chai with Nanice on LA Talk Radio. Everything's there for you to download. There's tons of free downloads, song downloads, and book downloads, and articles, and everything that you could imagine for your awakening. And while you're there, don't forget to take the pledge. It will change your life and help you change the world. So until next time, remember that you are loved, that God loves you, and I love you. Have a beautiful, beautiful week. And I leave you with Secondhand God. Bye for now.
Just mirrors and lies. You cried out in the night, fears and tears and endless fright. I'll hold your hand if you set you free. It's not hard when you believe. Been to the mountains, I slept in the streets, searched every great mind, but no one did I meet. I searched every house in the eyes of those who knew, but only to realize there weren't even a few. Endlessly I searched through all this facade, but all I ever found was just a secondhand God. I was looking for God in all the wrong ways. I thought I found him once or twice, but he'd never stay. Star-eyed baby of mine, open your mind, open your eyes. It's time to recognize that a secondhand God is just mirrors and lies. You cry out in the night, fears and tears and endless fright. I'll hold your hand if you set you free. It's not hard when you believe. somebody whisper these words in my ear. I've got something to tell you that you want to hear. I thought it Mother Mary, an angel, a guide. I said, show yourself to me, now I continue to hide. He said, the answer you've been seeking is not outside. The way to get to paradise is right inside. There's no place to hide and no one else you could be. Why couldn't I see? You've always answered my cry. Now who am I? Why did it take me so long to buy? A second-hand God was all I could find. Until I stopped and turned the journey inside. Synchronicity rings true. It's now I finally see it could only have been me. I shoot my destiny. Star-eyed baby of mine, you've opened your mind, you've opened your eyes. Just now you've recognized that a second-hand God is just mirrors and lies. You cried out in the night, fears and tears and endless frights. I held your hand, you set you free. It's not hard, now you believe.